value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Hello, everyone. Just before we start, we mentioned diversification a lot in this show, so we just need to make you aware that diversification cannot ensure profits or protect against the loss of principal. Anyway, on with the show.
Good day, everybody, and welcome to the U.S. Lens. I'm Ron Insana, Senior Advisor to Schroders North America. You know, on most days we talk about public markets, the stock market, the bond market, the commodity markets, but there's an entirely different investment world out there that not everyone is entirely familiar with. It's the private investment market, or the investment market for private assets. What are they? Where are the opportunities in 2022? And what do you need to know before taking a step in that direction? Joining me now to talk about that is Nils Rode. He is Chief Investment Officer for Schroders Capital. Nils, thanks for being with us. Appreciate your time.
Hi, Ron. Great to be here.
Thanks. Let me ask you first, when we talk about private assets, we are not talking about my collection of signed sports memorabilia, are we? What are we talking about exactly?
Well, it's all types of investments that are basically not listed anywhere at a stock exchange. So that means they are privately sourced, they are privately held. Which also makes them more complicated because sourcing assets or companies in the private markets that can take months or in some cases years, it means that they are held for a longer time, which can be years, like for 4 to 7 years for private equity assets, or even longer for private infrastructure assets. They're also not so easy to sell, which can also take months or in some cases years. So then the question is, why should anybody be interested in that if it's all so difficult? There is huge interest because there are also many reasons why this is very interesting. Just to give you a few very short points here, if it's privately sourced, it means there's much broader access to information before anyone makes an investment. It means that terms can be negotiated. Often there's less competition than you would have if you compete for something at a stock exchange. If assets are held for many years, and often it's under full control of the private owners, then it means operational improvements can be made. Often assets or companies can be transformed completely. Also with regard to selling these assets, there's a lot of flexibility about when to sell and to whom to sell, and also a lot of patience that is built in here. And all of this makes this asset class attractive. And then the last point I want to mention is it also provides you with access to areas that you do not find on any exchange that are not listed anywhere. So for example, small, very fast growing young companies as just one example.
And that's been an area of great interest. I mean, we've seen hedge fund investors, private equity investors, along with venture capitalists, start getting into startups that don't even have revenue or profits. In some cases, they're conceptual. Can you talk a little bit more about that opportunity set where you're looking at these private assets that are in many ways unknown to the public?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the stock markets, in many ways, the private side, and in this case, the venture capital industry, has been really feeding the next generation of great companies into the stock markets. There are tens of thousands of startups being created and financed every year. Then, of course, a certain number of those will be the next multi-billion companies of the future that go public and then also become stars on the listed side. So venture definitely plays a huge role. And if you are able to invest in those companies very early on, when these are still startups with a small team, often at that stage, even without revenues, and you are able to access those companies that might be the 100 billion plus market cap company 10 years later or 15 years later, of course, there's huge value creation potential.
All right. So with respect to that then, and it was an interesting area last year, clearly, with respect to private assets, both in terms of performance, in terms of fundraising, and also there were a fair number of exits as well. How would you characterize the environment in 2022?
Yeah, so it's true that the last 2 years really have been stellar years along all the dimensions that you mentioned. And also, it's clear that there have been some important tailwinds for the industry. So if you look at private equity, healthcare and technology are areas that have performed very strongly, and that these are areas where historically private equity is very active. And also the listed markets have helped because the IPO window was wide open. And there has been strong interest in private assets before, and that has increased further over the last 2 years. The flip side of that is that also fundraising has grown further to record levels. So more money flowing into private assets than ever before. And so the flip side of that is that we have seen historically, if you look at the long time horizon over the last 20 plus years, that more money flowing in also means that this can put some pressure on entry valuations and on performance expectations, at least in some parts of the market. But we continue to see that there are also in this market environment interesting opportunities, but they may be a bit more difficult to find.
Yeah, let me ask you about that, because we've seen these cycles come and go before, maybe not exactly in the same manner that we're seeing it right now, particularly with the smaller and maybe less established companies. When this much money starts flowing in to the private asset world, first, what are the challenges that you see ahead, and then what are the opportunity sets as well?
Well, the money flows are not the same. So private assets is a huge industry, has become a huge industry. It's about an $8 trillion industry now. So the money that's flowing in is not flowing equally to all parts of the market. So that creates opportunities. And if you just lean back for a minute and look at where has the performance and also the expected outperformance of private assets come from conceptually, There are really three reasons or three areas. One is the illiquidity that I mentioned at the very beginning that investors need to accept so that they have a certain element of lock-in and cannot sell as quickly as they can in listed markets. There is what we call the complexity premium, which is really doing things that are difficult with these private companies or private assets, which only very few investors are able to do because they have the skill set to do this. And there might be some other risk premiums, like if you invest in smaller companies, there might be a small company risk premium. If you look at these three drivers of returns, then for the reasons that we discussed, the significant money inflows, the illiquidity premium in many areas of the markets is under pressure. What we see is that the complexity premium, so doing the difficult things, turning a very small company into a huge company, which requires enormous skills. These are the things that are still possible and that still continue to drive returns. So especially in this market environment, these areas where you have more of a skill premium than a risk premium, where it's about driving complex opportunities, that's where the most attractive areas are in today's market and also looking at this year.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
So for pension and other investors who, you know, for the last, let's say, 20 years have used the endowment model where they've invested in private assets, whether it's venture capital, whether it's hedge funds, whether it's private equity or real estate, they've done that as a diversification model based on the late David Swensen's activities at Yale. How has that changed for large investors, and what do they need to know about the private asset market today?
Yeah, so today many investors are doing exactly what you described, have become very active within private assets. What we see though is that the way they construct their private asset portfolios is still very different. So not so many really have achieved a broad diversification within private assets, which has many merits. So if you combine things like private equity and private debt and private real estate, private infrastructure in one portfolio in a diversified way, and then even go one or two levels deeper there, and within private equity, you do not only do buyouts, so control investments of private companies, but you also do venture investments and growth capital and maybe some turnaround investments. And if you diversify these private investments also across regions, then you can reach a level of diversification where the portfolio typically benefits a lot because the underlying risk drivers and return drivers are very different across these different strategies. So it's interesting to combine them. And also the liquidity profiles of these different strategies are different and can complement each other. So where in the past the topic has been, as you rightly say, to diversify into private assets, we see now for the next years more the priority on diversifying further within private assets.
All right, so you have a background in private equity in particular. When you look across the spectrum of available opportunities, what seems most interesting to you in 2022?
Well, so the focus in my view should be especially on this complexity premium. So the question then is, where can you find it? Where can you find more complex investment situations, also more inefficient situations with also less competition for deals, and where extraordinary rare skills of the fund managers, but also of the management of those companies can be applied, and where we believe that you can find that best is at the what we call the long tail of the private asset markets. That means the small and mid-sized transaction on the buyout side and the younger and faster growing companies on the venture and growth sides. And what I mean by the long tail is that if you look at the numbers within private equity, 95% of all transactions are these small and mid-sized transactions or these younger companies representing half of the market. And the larger transactions, they represent the other half of the market, but only 5% of the deal flow. So we see the ability to be very selective and also find very interesting opportunities along this long tail, along this 95% of the market.
Are there particular sectors that look more, obviously technology always is in the mix. It's always part of the conversation. Healthcare of late has been as well. Are those the two principal areas of interest these days when you get into the smaller, more complex companies, or are there other areas, whether it's logistics or climate or any of those other topics that exist today that also present interesting opportunity sets?
Yeah, so technology and healthcare remain interesting. They have, of course, gotten a huge boost over the last 2 years due to the pandemic. But they have been interesting and have been doing well before the pandemic, and we believe they will do even better after the pandemic. And so if you look at that in a bit more detail, on the technology side, that is a venture growth topic, but it's increasingly also a buyout topic, as also many of the more mature companies are tech-driven or tech-enabled companies. And on the venture growth side, here we see much more to do, for example, with regard to the future of work. So we are convinced that the hybrid work environment is here to stay, and new technology will be there and will be needed to support that. If you look at it on the healthcare side, then there are many areas that remain attractive, healthcare services on the buyout side. But then if you look at the venture side, it's mostly about biotech. A big part of the biotech investments is going into oncology, so finding cures and treatment for cancer. There are new revolutionary technologies being developed, so that's a very interesting investment area. And then another topic, also tech related, is on the climate tech side, where this is about new technologies to reduce CO2 emissions and also where possible to capture the CO2. And then one last point, looking at the private equity world more broadly, there are some interesting new opportunities on the secondary side. So secondaries meaning acquiring existing assets from other investors. Traditionally, these have been fund stakes that were sold from one investor to another. There's no big change in the secondaries market, that these so-called GP-led transactions are growing strongly. What that means in one sentence is fund managers have great companies. Instead of selling those companies after the 4 to 7 years that I mentioned earlier, they decide to keep those because there's still many good things that they can do with those companies, and often it's some of their best companies in their portfolios. So what is being done instead increasingly today is that fund managers, they hold on to their companies. They provide an option for existing investors to sell it, so providing them with some liquidity options. And this creates the opportunity for new investors to come in. And so this GP-led part of the market, there are many reasons why this is interesting. We see that that also growing strongly. So just from this list, I believe you see that there are many different things that we believe remain highly attractive.
Final question for you. I mean, the public markets these days are fretting over, obviously, changes in central bank policy, particularly those of the Federal Reserve in the United States, and how aggressive it might be in raising interest rates to fight inflation. Maybe true in the UK, maybe true in Canada, Australia, maybe even in Europe, which saw a record inflation print this week. How do rising interest rates affect private assets?
So 2 points here. If there would be some slowdown this year, the biggest effect would be that some of the tailwinds that I mentioned might be not as strong anymore as they were, especially on the exit side. But that would be nothing unusual as private equity, if you look at the long term, the exit windows, they have opened and they have closed, and that's not a big issue. For the private equity investments themselves, if you look at the different types of investments, then many of them tend to be to a certain degree less linked to what's happening in the overall economy and the financial markets. And you have this built-in model of a lot of patience and flexibility as the investors in private equity. They can be patient, they can slow down or accelerate the investment pace depending on the market environment and the opportunities they see. And with regard to the exit, in case the exit environment should slow down for a certain time, then also private equity as a business model has the inbuilt flexibility to wait for the right moment and to wait for the right buyer. So that's why we typically sleep very well on the private asset side and the private equity side, no matter what happens in the markets.
All right, Nils, always a pleasure. Thanks for being with us today. Appreciate your time.
Thanks a lot, Ron.
Nils Rowe, Chief Investment Officer for Schroders Capital, joining us. That wraps up this edition of the US Lens.
Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to find out more, check out our website, schroders.com/theinvestor download. You can also get in contact with us about anything in the show or ideas for future shows at schroderspodcast@schroders.com. Please remember to subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review. We're now doing one show a week, which will be available every Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. Thanks very much for listening, but above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.